Bye. You are listening to WHFR 89.3 on your FM dial. We are making waves. WHFR Dearborn. This is the new WHFR Journal. I am Susan Morell, and I'm sitting in today for Jay Kornick, who is out of town, and I hope he's enjoying himself and finding some good weather. And joining me in the studio today is my co-host, Nega Apigian.
Hi.
Hi there.
And good morning. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and thank you for being here, Ned.
It's always my pleasure.
I appreciate it. And it's warming up to be a nice, warm, muggy day here in Michigan, but we have to be thankful that it's going to be warm. It's going to be around 80 degrees. And
my furnace went on last night.
Oh, whoops.
I keep
But we're hoping that there's no thunderstorms, but if there are, we'll bear with it. But we'll be right back with you. All right, we are here to steer it up.
I was just going to say the same thing.
That's why we're
Jay's
here.
Jay's theme song is Steer It Up.
Steer It Up. And this is local news and views, and Ned and I are here to offer our opinions that are strictly our opinions, that are not affiliated with Henry Ford Community College or any management personnel here at the radio station. And our beautiful radio station happens to be located on the beautiful campus of Henry Ford Community College, and they have provided these beautiful studios for us and all this equipment, and so we're very thankful to them for that, aren't we, Ned?
Absolutely. We're here in wonderful Dearborn, Michigan, for those of you who are around the world.
Listening online. And we have more firepower online.
Absolutely.
So I hope everybody is enjoying it. But we're going to talk about some of the local things that are happening around Dearborn and Dearborn Heights and Metro Detroit. And I'm going to start off with an article from the Dearborn Heights Times Herald for Wednesday, May 28th.
The same article and appears that was from, in the Press and Guide as
right,
well.
Right, this past Wednesday, and today is May 30th, so we're wrapping up the month of May. And this article, we've discussed this topic here on the new WHFR Journal numerous times, and it's about Andy Dillon, who is the Speaker, Democratic Speaker of the House in Redford Township. And it says that he can breathe a little easier this week after it was announced Friday that recall petitions targeting him fell, fortunately, 500 signatures short of the 8,724 signatures needed to put the issue to the vote. And the recall organizers turned in 15,739 signatures to the Secretary of State office, but the preliminary findings by officials have discounted nearly half of those signatures, and they were tossed out because they could not be linked to registered voters in Dillon's district. How about that? So they were turned in inappropriately. They were not legitimate. And this is a Democratic Party spokesperson. Liz Kerr says that this just proves that this extremist out-of-state group uses fraud to push the recall through. So that is a little bit disheartening. And so we're not too happy to hear that. And
says them.
So
and fraud. Dillon's supporters say that.
Right. And so that is the charge. And what Dillon says, Dillon's camp has maintained that this extremist group paid people at a Redford homeless shelter to go through phone books and sign the names of people listed in the 17th district. Well, that sounds very unprofessional to me. What do you think, Ned?
Well, I just had this conversation with the president of the Democratic Club of Dearborn Heights yesterday. I didn't know it, and of course I didn't see it till here. Apparently, they were in order of the in the phone book, taking addresses and then signing names, which is absolutely strange that people would be signing a petition
well,
in order
that,
in the telephone book.
But isn't that illegal? Isn't the petition supposed to be signed by the actual registered voter?
Yeah, it's unlikely that they would have gotten people who happen to be in the phone book one right after another to be met on the street.
Well,
I mean, that's crazy.
It's a totally inappropriate procedure to follow in a petition, because I recently worked on a petition, and my experience was you have to, the voter, the registered voter in that district has to sign, you have to give your home address, you have to give the city, you have to give the county that you're registered in, all the pertinent information, contact information, and then they check you. You send it up to Lansing, and they check you in the rolls.
Excuse me. What they're doing is, to get that many signatures, they're going around the street saying, you want to reduce your taxes, and, you know, they simplify the issue far beyond what it is, and they're getting everybody to sign. But you need to be a resident of the district. You need to also be a registered voter in the district. I hate to tell you.
Right. You can't just be somebody living
if you're not a registered voter. Yeah, you have to always ask a person, are you a registered voter?
Exactly.
If they say no, you don't bother with their signature.
Right. And so the recall was launched in response to a $1.4 billion tax increase that Dillon was, you know, he led the way through the state legislature last year. But unfortunately, there was a major gridlock in Lansing all next year, and they had to get it resolved one way or another. And they
he's not the only one.
He's not the only one. He did.
Many Democrats, many Republicans, all went for the increase.
Well, they had to.
Interesting thing about that increase, I know you're probably going to ask me, it's things are always characterized in a way as an oversimplification. All they were trying to do during the Engler years as governor, they kept reducing. There's a concept of the conservatives in the world who don't like government is to starve government. So what they were doing, they kept reducing the taxes and reducing the taxes and saying, don't you want to have your taxes reduced? Well, when you reduce taxes beyond the ability for you to cover the services, that's what's happening. Now, according to Dillon, I had a conversation about this. This tax readjustment, it's not an increase, it's a readjustment to where the taxes were in 2004 in order to meet the reduced budget that's been developed, reduced since 2004. So it's not exactly, it's an increase over what it was yesterday, but it's a lot less than what it was, 6 years ago.
Well, I totally
agree.
That's
the concept of how when you go around getting petitions and you can't explain that to people, otherwise you got to eliminate more services and more services. Now, people who don't like government want to eliminate as many services as possible.
Well, that is true, and I agree with you. And if we want to continue on and have a social service network, people will seem to want services.
There's also a legal issue in here, which cited in the newspaper, which I didn't know, is the recall organizers were previously were directed by Wayne County Circuit Court Judge William Giovanni not to use non-district petitioners. In other words, it's not only that you cannot go to ask people to sign who are non-district petitioner, but you can't employ people who don't live in the district to go around getting the signatures of legitimate people in the district. That's something was new to me. Apparently that was his order. So that is a completely new twist. It's not only that you have to be a registered voter and you have to live in the district, the person presenting the petition to you must also be a person of the district.
And a registered voter.
Well, it doesn't say that here. At least that person has to live in the district.
Okay. All right. So let's move on to our next agenda. And I know that you have been on the show with Jay the past several weeks, and that Jay and you have been discussing
Social Security,
and you've been discussing the economic stimulus payment program. And Jay received an email from Mary Jo Duravage, who is a regular listener of the show, and I do believe that Jay even had her as a guest on his show.
What did she say?
Several years ago. And she wanted to point out the information that is located on the IRS webpage, and that it gives additional information about who may be eligible for the rebate, even if you do not normally file a tax return. If you have at least $3,000 in certain types of income, you may be eligible. You may also be able to use free file economic stimulus payment. So these are some of the types of and benefits of income that may qualify. Social Security recipients. There's information for people who receive retirement, disability, and survivor's benefits. There is information for Veterans Affairs recipients who receive pension, disability, and survivor's benefits. There is information for people who receive railroad retirement benefits.
Yeah, that's a separate issue altogether. You know, people that work for the railroad don't pay into Social Security. I didn't know that when I learned that several years ago.
I didn't know that. Yeah. And so they are a special category,
right,
and receive Tier 1 railroad retirement benefits. That sounds pretty good to me. And then there's information for people who are low-wage workers who receive a salary, a wage, tips, etc., or who are self-employed. And then there's information for military combat personnel. And that's on the IRS.gov website. They have a whole list of frequently asked questions, and this was in the paper, this was in the Heritage newspaper, the Press and Guide.
Well, we thank her for her diligence in helping us inform the public.
Yeah, and this was from May 28th, this past Wednesday. So if you want to look at frequently asked questions, you can go there. Go to the website. The website is awesome. It's awesome.
The oversimplification of that is that it's simply this. Even if you do not file taxes because you don't have any income and you don't need to file, I know some people that tell me that, you must file, show you didn't make a dime, because if you don't file, you won't get a refund, even though you didn't pay into it. So in general, you must file in order to receive the whatever we call that stipend.
The rebate.
The rebate.
Okay.
Even though you never usually file because you don't, your income is not taxable. That's the simplification of what she's talking about, that you must file is the important issue.
You must file. The IRS loves to hear from us.
Right. Even though you don't have a sufficient income, because if you don't file, they don't know who you are, and you certainly are not going to get a check. You might get a check for a lot less than $300, even though you didn't send anything, but you will get something.
Okay, and I understand, Ned.
Yeah?
That you have numerous stories.
Oh, I got a couple little ones that I think are interesting. First thing has to do with our college. You know, we got to say something about the college, right?
Yeah.
It looks like the Henry Ford Community College adjunct faculty voted to unionize. That's, depending on the listener, that's either good or bad. I don't know how it makes the college administration. And the article pertaining to it says the party's over for adjunct faculty members at Henry Ford, and the real work has just begun. After a victory celebration earlier this month marking the vote of 89% of the college's 334 part-time to be represented by the HFCC adjunct faculty organization. And as a concept, that's all I want to say about it. I don't want to go into detail, but though, since this is a college radio station, that's something that affects the college. I don't know if the administration's happy to hear that, but it's on the front page of the Times Herald, and you might find it interesting as a listener.
Well,
so the union situation, they say, is going down. Well, in this case,
down.
It's going up here.
Oh, it's going up.
It's going up here.
Oh, okay.
The place
it's going up.
It's definitely going up.
It's a good thing. Okay.
It depends on your point of view.
Well, it depends on where. I think unions are good. I know that Jay is in favor of unions, and I am. I don't know about you, but.
Jay's anyone. I used, you know, I don't belong to a union because I'm a self-employed, semi-retired architect. So,
oh, okay.
We don't have a union.
No. But you have an opinion.
If it was not for unionism in the that may created the middle class, so you're going to find out what's going to happen without him.
Right.
Everybody will be in the lower class.
Right. And so I think you have a couple other stories.
Since it's Memorial Day weekend, we ought to say something about Dearborn's parade. This is the Dearborn.
Well, Memorial Day has already passed.
Yes, but I understand it turned out great. A lot of airplanes, and our parade in Dearborn apparently is the largest and most important one in the region.
Oh.
For those of you who don't know that, next year, you got to make sure that you're at the Dearborn Parade, and that takes in an area from Greenfield through Michigan to Schaefer. I used to pay attention to them when I lived one block south of Michigan Avenue. I couldn't avoid the parade, so I'd get up and go watch it. So if you haven't been to the Dearborn Parade, you don't know what you're missing, so make sure you attend next year.
Okay. And
that's it.
That's it. Okay, well, I have an article here on the editorial page of the Times Herald for Wednesday, May 28th, and this is about driver's licenses. And it says, Michigan is poised to become the fifth state authorized to use these enhanced driver's licenses. Governor Jennifer Granholm recently signed into law the four-bill package that creates an enhanced driver's license for cross-border travel to Canada, Mexico, and the Caribbean, as well as completing the changes needed to allow legal and temporary residents to obtain a driver's license.
Well, it's important to us. We live on the border.
I don't know.
Every state doesn't need it. But
Terry Lynn Land, who is our Secretary of State, says that the legislation calls for a more convenient and affordable option than a passport for crossing the border. In the past, a driver's license, just a regular driver's license, was used to cross the border if we wanted to go to Canada or Mexico.
Usually they didn't say anything.
They didn't even say anything. They didn't ask you for any ID or anything.
I have experienced that depending who you got and you showed them your driver's license, and they'd say, that doesn't prove anything. It just means you got a driver's license. Doesn't mean you're a citizen of the United States.
Well, they just used to, you'd pull up there and the guy would
ask you, where are you going?
They would ask you, where are you going? What are you going to do? Where were you born?
Casino, I'm going. Then they'd say, pass through real fast.
Right. So the debate has been about a passport as opposed to a driver's license. And traditional passports cost about $100 and take 4 to 6 weeks to receive from the U.S. State Department, which I already have my passport, and most people do. We were told a couple of years ago that we had to go get our passports in order to go to Mexico. We were told that, and that was publicized several years ago, so I did that.
You need one anyway, doesn't it?
But I already have mine. So under the state legislation, enhanced driver's license will only cost about $50 and will be entirely voluntary and available only to Michigan residents.
There's going to be two types of licenses?
There's going to be two types of licenses.
Oh, my goodness.
Who are only available to Michigan residents who are also U.S. citizens. Anyone not wanting an enhanced driver's license
can get the cheap one.
Would be issued a standard driver's license, which we already have.
Which is not cheap. It's $35.
Right,
now.
But we already have those. So I'm thinking, I already have a standard driver's license and I already have a passport. Why do I need an enhanced driver's license?
But when you renew your regular license, you may want to spend the extra $15.
No, but why? I mean, here's all it's going to do, and you can tell me what you think of these requirements. It says it's going to require that an enhanced license and personal ID card include security measures to protect against unauthorized disclosure of personal information. I mean, shouldn't that already be a given with a normal driver's license?
Well, you know, I fly regularly. I'm wondering if it could be used. It's okay with the new airline thing. The airlines could pop up and say, "Where's your passport?" They don't now. All they require is a driver's license, so I'm sure the regular one and the enhanced one will work. You know what? We got started a little late today, so we need to do a station ID.
That's true.
Since I'm talking, let me I'll give half and you give the other half. You are listening to the new WHFR Journal, and this is Jay Koronek's show. And us interlopers are here today making waves here in Dearborn, Michigan,
at the college station. Yes, we are.
For the Henry Ford Community College right here in Dearborn, Michigan. And when you're around here at Evergreen and Ford Road, stop in and visit.
Yes, you are listening to WHFR Dearborn, the only station making waves. And it just has a lot of other requirements that, you know, for the upgraded driver's license that I don't really think are necessary. I think if you have a regular driver's license and a passport, that should be sufficient. That's my opinion.
Well, if you got a passport, you don't really need anything else.
Yeah, I mean, why do you need an extra document?
Anyway, we don't have, it's an interesting today that we have a little story pertaining to Dearborn Heights. You know, one of the major problems in Dearborn Heights is the flooding situation depending on where you live. And here's a story by Sean Delaney. He's a nice young man that covers all the Dearborn Heights council meetings. Here's what he says. Approximately 300 parcels in the city of Dearborn Heights could be affected if Wayne County officials move forward with a proposal designed to reduce the number of flooding events that occur along the north branch of the Ecorse Creek. However, Wayne County officials say that despite the large amount of land required for the project, the impact on local property owners could be minimal. And they're saying, that's our intent. However, there are no guarantees in a project like this, says Mr. Kurt Heise, whose wife used to be on the council in Dearborn Heights. He's the director of the Wayne County Department of Environment. It was less than a month ago that the Heise presented the county's findings based on a flood control study requested by the city of Dearborn Heights following flooding that occurred in May 2004. The county presented the city with several recommendations that could ultimately reduce the number of flooding events, not restore them. The article doesn't say exactly what they're going to do, but it is a critical problem, and those of you who live in Dearborn Heights along the Ecorse Creek might be assured that somebody is thinking about this problem and doing something about it. Hopefully.
Well, I know it is a problem in Dearborn Heights, and I hear about it. I live in Dearborn Heights, but I don't. The flooding never gets to me.
Neither to me.
Fortunately, I'm on higher ground.
Actually, it cost me a lot of extra money. Where I live, there was a fund the city had pertaining to the Leffler Drain, I think, which those of us that lived in Military Hill Subdivision had to pay. The city managed to take that money and use it for this floodplains issues in the city several years ago when the money was generated by the people who live in the district from their taxes, as I believe how it was stated to me at the time. And then the money was used somewhere else in the city that didn't pertain. We don't have a flood problem in Military Hills that I'm aware of.
Oh, okay, that's where you live.
Right.
Yeah. No, I don't have that problem either. But I know they have the problem.
Definitely in the south end.
In Edward Hines in the park.
Yeah, but nobody lives in the park.
Right, so. Nobody lives in the park, but if you're ever...
It is a floodplain, you're not supposed to...
It is a floodplain, and I drove through there once, early in the morning, and... Usually they block it off when it's flooded.
Somebody made a mistake.
And they forgot to block it off.
And you went swimming.
And I went swimming. It was way early in the morning. It was like 6 o'clock in the morning. It was dark, okay? I drove right into the water. And, you know, I didn't see it. You can't see it because it's dark. And so as soon as I hit the water, I knew I was in the water. And I fortunately turned the car around and I was able to escape. And so there was no emergency, but it's a creepy feeling to end up in the middle of a flood and you're in your car and it's really dark. There's nobody around. You don't have a cell phone. And so I got out of it. So it was a good thing. Yeah, I was lucky. And no damage to the vehicle, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't want to do that again because they tell you it's a safety hazard. But... I want to go on with some more of the local news and views. You are listening to the new WHFR Journal right here on WHFR, the only station making waves. I am Susan Morrell, sitting in for Jay Kornick today. And joining me is my guest host, is Ned Apigian. And he knows a lot about politics in Dearborn Heights. He's been a local candidate.
Yeah.
For the Dearborn Heights City Council?
Among other things.
Among other things. So he gets around in political circles, and he really knows his stuff.
Somebody asked me, why do you want to do that? And I said, well, I don't know. I'm tired of losing, so I like to win one.
And you should win, because you're an educated person. You're very... You're very informed, and I think you know what's happening.
You know what?
I think you have good judgment.
Yeah, hopefully.
I voted for you.
Thank God somebody did.
I did. Numerous times. Yes. But anyway, let me get to this article in the Heritage Newspaper Press and Guide for Sunday, May 25th. And this is an article from Carl Levin, our senator from Michigan. And he says legislation is needed to combat skyrocketing energy prices. And I'm going to paraphrase his words. He says, because the Bush administration has proved itself unable and unwilling to take the necessary steps to provide affordable energy supplies for the American people, it is up to Congress to try to jumpstart a comprehensive solution to skyrocketing energy prices. And he has a number of steps laid out here. And he says the first step is for Congress to pass legislation that will put a cop back on the beat, in unregulated energy markets to ensure these markets are free from excessive speculation and manipulation. And I couldn't agree more. That's driving up our oil prices, I'm sure, 30 to 40%. You know, it's going up like 20 cents a day every time you fill up. It's very nerve-wracking and annoying. And he says the second step is to stop filling the strategic petroleum reserve until prices are lower.
Isn't there a limit to the size of that strategic petroleum reserve?
Well, it's 95% full.
Oh,
so
we should fill it up. If it's only 5%, might as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's $125 a barrel. It's just too expensive to keep filling it. It's 95% full.
Someone said, I read somewhere, that stopping that wouldn't change the price significantly to talk about.
Well, I mean, every little bit helps. Everything that you do helps.
I'll tell you what my opinion is about that, which I cannot understand, and I'm sure everybody should be in an uproar about it. When the price of a barrel is $100 and it goes from $100 to $105, that oil has to be pumped out of the well. Usually speculators are speculating on the price. It has to be stored. Then it has to be shipped. Then it has to be turned into gasoline or diesel or whatever it is. All that takes about at least 5 to 6 weeks to end up in the gas station around the corner.
Right.
So why does the price of gas go up immediately when that spot market in Amsterdam goes up from whatever what to what?
Well,
why shouldn't it that be reflected in my price 6 weeks later? Because the gas that's in that pump came out at $100, not $110.
Right. Well,
that's what I don't understand.
I think it's the speculators. But number three, he has a third step. He says a third step to combat the rising gas prices is to develop advanced vehicle technologies and alternative energy sources that will significantly reduce our dependence on foreign oil.
And that'll take how many decades? That's not going to help you tomorrow.
We need greater federal investment in biofuel technologies, which we've been talking about for our, you know, decades, okay? 30 years, I'm sure. And number four, he says we need to make sure the burden of higher energy prices is being equally shared. And not the hardest upon those who can least afford it. I don't know how he's going to do that, but he says large oil companies are reaping the record profits at the expense of the average American, and we should institute a windfall profits tax on the oil companies. What do you think of that, Ned?
What's the last number there? Because I'm going to add number six. This was number five.
Well, his conclusion is skyrocketing energy prices.
He had a listing there.
Yeah, he has a list, but he says skyrocketing energy prices are tying up our already weak economy in knots and causing financial pain to working families throughout this country. So that's it. And what is your take?
Well, I think his last number was six or five. It seems to me that we are located in the country of Iraq, which has the third largest oil reserves, and we are paying a ridiculous amount for it there, but they're selling it there to their own local population at a much reduced price. I don't understand why we say we're there, we'll take all the oil that we need in for ourselves, and we'll pay you the base a price that's has nothing to do with OPEC's price. Here we are saving that country, and they're probably a member of OPEC, and they're going along with the price scheme of that cartel. That doesn't make any sense at all.
Well, no, it doesn't. And
I'll be happy to take all your production. I'll be happy to increase go in here, make the wells better, I'll make the investment, but I want it all.
Well,
and I'll pay you the fair market value, not the Martell's price.
No, but Ned, one of the promises of the Iraq war was that the oil in Iraq
would pay for the war.
Would pay for the war, and that has never happened.
Well, I know.
And nobody talks about it except Ned Apigian.
No, well, I think it should pay for the war. Whatever the war cost us, we should take the oil and say, this is what it cost us to liberate you, and I'm taking the oil. That's taking it and repaying us for the cost of the war. That's what Wolfowitz promised us, right?
So, well, yeah. Where is he now?
Where's Wolfie now?
Where is Wolf?
Lost his job at the World Bank.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Well, he had that girlfriend. It cost him his job.
Yeah, a girlfriend seemed to interfere with political careers.
Can't have a girlfriend. It's really bad. Especially if you're married, I guess.
Yeah, oh, well, don't do that. But
so that's what I think about Carl Levin.
Yeah.
I like him very much, but seems we're already there. We should take it and pay him the fair market price.
Yeah, that should be part of his points. That should be one of his points.
Absolutely.
That should be the number one point.
I didn't say steal it. Pay the market value.
All right. But anyway, there's an opinion piece in the Press and Guide about summer fun, avoiding high gas prices, staying near home. And this is by Carl Ziemak, and he talks about all the events coming up around Metro Detroit. They're close to us in Dearborn Heights, and Allen Park. And
if you just watch TV and didn't leave the house, you'll even save more.
Right. And so I don't know if we have time to mention all these things, but
I wouldn't.
If you read the newspaper and get on the internet, you'll find out all the local stuff is listed there on a weekly basis. So,
well, you know what I do, and I would think most people should do the same thing. I'm mostly traveling around here in Dearborn Heights. I'm up and down Ford Road from Telegraph to Inkster, from Telegraph to Southfield. But I go get my computer lesson at 12 Oaks, which is a 45-mile round trip from this part of the world to 12 Oaks Mall at the Macintosh store.
Oh, so you're taking Apple.
Yeah. Well, that's what we got in the studio. We got Apples galore in here.
Is it a good class?
Oh, yeah. It's wonderful. It's $99 a year, and you can go once a week.
That's a great deal.
$2 a lesson. Anyway, so... But in the old days, if I needed to go to Southfield, I would go on my computer lesson is Monday, I'd go on Sunday. Or if I wanted to go to Westland, now what I do, I say, well, look, I'm going to go there anyway. Why not hit that on the way up, and I'll catch the other one on my way down? So you got to do a little smart organizing of your trips. You don't not do what you need to do.
Well,
and
that's
The other thing, when they say the speed limit is 70 on the expressway, drive at 60. It's a big saving. And when you see the red light three blocks ahead of you, coast to the light. Don't accelerate to the light just so you can wear out your brakes to stop. I do that all the time. I did that before when the gas was 27 cents a gallon. That's a long time ago.
You are a smart driver, and I'm starting to utilize those suggestions on a regular basis in my
Because you still got to go where you got to go. This place was meant to be driven in.
Right, and why use the gas if you don't really need to excessively? I mean, I see these drivers all the
beeping
time.
Beeping the horn behind you just so they can accelerate the stop at the
Well,
light.
Yeah, I mean, they're backseat drivers are trying to run you off the road. They're in a hurry. They're not getting anywhere fast. And it's silly at this point.
Well,
you're not showing off. You're not showing off your intelligence or your fast car or anything at this point.
I'm all for fast cars, but you drive them judiciously.
Fast cars belong on the racetrack.
You can only control. You cannot worry about what other people do. You can only control your own actions. I cannot get wind power or nuclear going any faster, and I can't make the auto companies do what they should, but I can drive my car more judiciously. And that's
right.
All. That's the best advice anybody can give you, no matter other than don't leave the house, watch TV all day.
And I think kind of the era of the fast car or the hot rod car is kind of over. I just don't see that as an attractive feature. Well, for a car buyer in the future.
Well, while we're talking about cars, we have an article about teen driving laws, which is really important because it has to do with life safety and it has to do with this conservation issue. A number of 16-year-olds are killed while being behind the wheel is down under the state's graduated licensing law. And there's an article here about traffic fatalities. They're giving a relationship between percentage, how they come down from year to 1996 and 1997, but the article essentially says the number of 16-year-old drivers injured or killed in auto accidents has declined dramatically in the last 11 years since Michigan policymakers enacted a graduated driver licensing law, new figures show. But as parents worry about sons and daughters getting behind the wheel for proms and graduation parties this spring, lawmakers are considering additional restrictions on new drivers. Some experts say the further tightening of teen driving laws is a very good idea because the statistics show it's the young people that are the ones that are getting into problems.
So what are going to be the tightening?
I don't really know. I'm not getting into the basic meat of the article, or else I have to read the whole thing and I'd have to turn the page. Whatever they're proposing, those are just proposals. It doesn't mean they'll happen. The legislature is you know what they say about government? It's an act of compromises.
Right.
You just keep compromising and compromising. It's like the smoking thing I wanted to say something about.
Right, but,
I'm going to ban smoking,
So one of the sad things that we
poor
always
smokers can't go anywhere and smoke in public.
No, they can't. But it's a health hazard. Truthfully, it is. But
if they want to kill themselves, they should have the right.
As far as teen drivers, they're not mature, and I don't think most of us, were not mature when we were teen drivers.
And they make
mistakes of judgment on their driving, on how fast they can go in different situations. And it's just, and then they show off with their friends and they don't pay as much attention. And they get in major accidents, and a lot of them get killed in these terrible accidents. And I always hate to see that because, somebody who was just graduating from high school, or they were in college, or they were just a recent graduate. And it's a very sad situation.
Here they are. Let me tell you what the proposed rules are. A level one learner's license, they're giving categories, which young drivers have to be at least 14 and 8 months old, have parental permission and complete 24 hours of classroom instruction, at least 6 hours of driving instruction, and 4 hours of observation. It sounds like something when I was in New York State. We had that. You couldn't drive alone when you were at a certain age until you were reaching out. Then level two, intermediate license for which a young driver must be at least 16, log at least 50 hours of supervised driving with parents, including 10 hours of night driving. And then for level 3, which carries no restrictions, they have to be at least 17, held, you have to take your driver's test 6 months. There's bunches of proposals. None of them are bad ideas. They're probably a great idea to have these categories.
I think they're good ideas. They sound good to me because the more supervised driving you can have.
The next category, the octogenarians that shouldn't be driving.
Yeah, they're going to come after us next. Right, Ned?
I don't think you're an octogenarian.
I'm not quite there yet, but I don't think you are either. But
no.
But we're on our way, and we hope that we can.
Time being what it is, it's going to be sooner than later.
Yeah. Okay, I want to get to.
What else do we have?
I want to get to announce an announcement that was emailed to the station by the Dearborn Animal Shelter.
Oh, good.
They're one of our favorite groups.
That we invite here.
Yeah, they're a nonprofit group. And they're having an off-site adoption showcase that will be tomorrow, Saturday, May 31st, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. It's going to be located at PetSmart at 5650 Mercury Drive in Dearborn. Mm. And the phone number is 313-441-3244. And the off-site adoption showcase is an adopter-friendly program to place rescued and deserted animals into new loving homes where they will receive the love, attention, and care that all animals deserve. And they have great animals there at the Dearborn Animal Shelter. And everyone, all of our listeners, are cordially invited to this event. And if you want to give them a call at the Dearborn Animal Shelter, their phone number is 313-943-2697. And so I often go to PetSmart to buy things for my pets, and they usually have adoption events there, and I always go visit the pets. It's a great way to visit pets and adopt an animal. And then there's also an article
where Circuit City is, isn't it? That's the one, right? On Ford Road.
Well, it says on Mercury Drive. Is that it?
Yes, excuse me.
Ned has a cold, too. I have a cold.
No, it's just all of a sudden.
Ned has a cold and I have a cold. Or else he has allergies. But anyway, we're both trying to get better. And also, there's an article from the Sunday, May 25th, Heritage Press and Guide about the Dearborn Animal Shelter. And they just had their third annual Mutt Strut last weekend. And within the past several weeks. And they are home, the Dearborn Animal Shelter is home to thousands of amazing animals who are waiting for a forever home. I'm a pet lover.
I guess.
And I just want to talk about a couple of these animals that are in the paper. Armani is a dog, and he's adorable. He's energetic, smart, and full of love. He's 1 year old, and he would prefer to live in a house without cats. He's prejudiced against cats. And I'm a cat lover.
So I remember that dog.
He can't be in my house. And so then he knows a few tricks. He knows how to sit down and shake. So he's obviously intelligent. And if you're looking for a feline friend, their 7-month-old Pikachu is the perfect choice. She's a cute kitten, and she loves to be cuddled. And then there's Max, a 1-year-old retriever mix, who would prefer to be the only dog in the house. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want any other dogs around. He wants to be the alpha dog. And then we have well-mannered, smart. He's well-mannered, smart, and curious. So he's got, some benefits to his personality. Then they have an 8-week-old kitten, Pumbaa, and she's a tiny treasure. She can fit into your hand. And so she would be a lovely addition to your family. Then we have Nina, who is a 2-year-old cat with a heart of gold, a wonderful, sweet personality. And so she is another option. And then there's 3-month-old Bella, a Jack Russell Terrier mix. She loves everyone she meets, and she's very curious, but she would prefer to live in a home without small children. And the shelter is open from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday. And the phone number is 313-943-2697. It's a great place, and the Dearborn Animal Shelter just helped me to rescue three kittens off my patio, and they adopted them out within 2 weeks. And they also helped me to rescue the mother cat, who's been on my patio for 4 years. So she is in transition. So they've been a great help to me. Wow. And I believe Ned has a medical announcement.
We have an interesting from Stephanie Worth White to us at the station. And she's telling us about upcoming events from the American Diabetes Association. Actually, I got one of these things from the Henry Ford Hospital for the hotel on the corner of Southfield and Ford Road for a different date, June 7th. But anyway, Stephanie says, upcoming events from the American Diabetes Association, programs and events offer information, education, fitness, and fun, if you can believe that. monthly diabetes review sessions, whether you've been recently diagnosed with diabetes or have been living with diabetes for years, you can take steps to lead a healthier life. Join the American Diabetes Association for Diabetes Review, a free one-hour class that provides basic education about the proper diabetes self-cure, or self-care, I'm sorry. The class is conducted by a certified diabetes educator and covers meal planning and portion size, exercise, that bad word, medication updates, stress management, blood glucose testing, and more. Upcoming dates are June 7th at 11 a.m. at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center at 15801 Michigan Avenue in Dearborn. And you can call them at 1-888-DIABETES or on the internet, www.diabetes.org. Interestingly enough, it's the same day that Henry Ford is doing theirs at the hotel on the corner of Ford Road and Telegraph, Ford Road and Southfield. Now it's changed its name. It used to be a Holiday Inn, now it's...
I didn't know exercise was a bad word.
Of course it's a bad word. It's a good thing, but it's a bad word.
It's a bad word. But Jay gave me a very interesting article from the Times Digest. This is international news from Tuesday, May 27th. Guess how much it costs to see a doctor in Czechoslovakia, Ned?
I have no idea. Probably free.
It costs $1.85.
That's not bad.
$1.85 a day in the hospital converge on $4. Four whole dollars.
Are these American dollars or Czech dollars?
Well, these, it says dollars. It's, the American dollars. And
other countries use the term, too. The Australians do, for sure, I know.
Apparently, the Czechoslovakians visit their doctors more than any other country in Europe. And they're not happy with these prices. They think they're too high. They think that health care, as a matter of principle, should be free.
Then they should go to Norway. They understand they got the best system.
Well, according to the Czech Constitution, it says that citizens have, on the basis of public insurance, the right to free medical care and free medical aids under the conditions defined by law. So they're supposed to get free medical services, so they're very upset. They're not getting free services.
Stuff like that in the good old USA gets people nervous.
So the Social Democratic Caucus says that the new payments were not only unconstitutional, but they are causing real pain in some of the segments of the population. Affluent Czechs admit that they spend far more on veterinary care for their pets than they do on their own health care.
I guess the dogs and cats are not covered.
Well, they're not covered, but the pets come first. Pets come first. You were going to go over to the Dearborn Animal Shelter and adopt a pet, but
you didn't
do it.
No, I didn't do it.
You didn't do it. You should have done it.
I mean, my wife would have kicked me out of the house. I mean, it's cold out there in the winter.
Okay, so that's all we have for today.
My wife goes to visit my daughter in Boston, and they have a golden doodle.
A golden doodle. Oh, that's a...
Cost $1,200. I can't imagine paying $1,200 for a dog.
Oh, that's outrageous.
She comes back, the damn dog, you got to hide all the food. It's always climbing up the table.
It's a designer dog.
It's a designer dog.
A designer dog. That's what they call it.
It yelps and make noise, and it's always got to be watched. So what's the difference?
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, we're getting near the end.
We're at the end of our show. This is the new WHFR Journal. I am Susan Morrell, and I thank you to Ned Apigian for joining me today.
Yeah, and we forgot to promote our own shows.
Well, we're running out of time here.
Okay.
But, Jay will be back next week, and I hope